This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. It's fun to share cute or cool or funny images of our kids on social media. It's an easy way to get a bunch of likes, and children are simply adorable, even sometimes when they're acting out. But are you sharing too much? A recent report from the United Kingdom's Children's Commissioner showed the ways children's data is being collected and how it may put them at risk as they grow up. By the time a child turns 13, the report said, parents have posted around 1,300 photos and videos of them. So what do we really need to know about all this? Joining Cincinnati Edition to discuss, our University of Florida Levin College of Law Senior Legal Skills Professor, Stacy Steinberg. She joins us on the phone. Welcome, Stacy.
Thank you so much for having me.
And University of Cincinnati professor, Dr. Nancy Jennings. Welcome, Nancy.
Thank you.
If you want to join the conversation, or if you have tales to share about whether you do or don't share images or information about your children online, join us at 513-419-7100. You can also email talk@wvxu.org or find us on Facebook or Twitter. We'll look for your comments and try to get some of those into the show as well. Stacy, I'd like to start with you. The issue of sharing images and information about children online is really about more than just upsetting or embarrassing the kids. There are legal concerns as well, right?
Absolutely. As I've looked at this topic, I've recognized that while there might be some concerns of kids not liking information that parents share, there are also some bigger issues that parents need to think about as well. The risks that might be posed by third parties who find the information about kids online, and also how the information could affect kids years into the future.
Who are the third parties that would seek this kind of information?
Well, as I was actually getting ready for our interview today, I was looking at the Barclays study that you mentioned on your website. And that's a great example of some of the potential third parties. You know, there are researchers who suggest that the information that we share online about our kids could be collected by private companies who might be creating either digital dossiers on our kids that could be used to target advertise to them, or it could be used for things like identity theft. The pictures that we share could be used by child predators who might find the pictures enticing, even if they're innocent looking to the average viewer. So these are just a few of the risks that could be posed by oversharing. Unfortunately, us as parents, we lack a lot of the information that that might help guide better sharing decisions. And so when I talk to parents, I really encourage them not to just stop sharing altogether, but to think about these long-term implications and to become well-informed before posting about their family online.
And that's something that I want to ask you, Nancy, is, you know, what do parents need to know? I want to quote from a paper that you wrote. This is a section of something that you wrote and published. Quote, even before children are born, expectant parents are using digital technologies to announce the baby's impending arrival, track the baby's development in utero, seeking pregnancy advice and solutions to discomforts, pains, and joys, and sharing photos of sonograms, tummies, and even birthing experiences. Uses of technology change as children develop, and as a result, parenting practices change as well. So Nancy, how is it that parents learn about what may be considered a responsibility to be more protective of their children in the online world?
Oh, absolutely. What we really need to think about is that developmental trend, right? So when they're little, sharing their pictures just seems natural, and it's like a part of your identity as well, that you're a parent and, you know, having children is part of your life as well. But it's really thinking about those long-term implications. You're already forming and shaping their identity even before they're born. So it's something to really to consider. So really always like think before you share and think about what some of those consequences might be. Thinking about your privacy settings and how can you practice privacy in your own life.
But where are those resources for parents who need to learn about the new online world and what their responsibility is and the dangers, frankly, of posting rather innocuous images of children?
Right. So information like that can be available through PBS parents. They can certainly get information from those types of sources. Also from the American Psychological Association and Common Sense Media. All of these provide wonderful information, particularly for parents, about regulating television, about regulating media use, and also about some of these privacy issues as well.
And Stacey, outside of those areas and resources that Nancy mentioned, what are some opportunities for just, I guess, society in general to have better resources or more immediate resources made available to parents so that they know what's right, what's wrong when it comes to handling their children's presence online?
In a lot of ways, I think that it's not so much a question of what's right and wrong at this point, as much as it's an issue that we need to kind of think about more. And the topic of how we talk about kids online and families online needs to become more of a central part of child rearing discourse. Just like we go to many sources to get better ideas of how to feed our kids or what kind of discipline might be appropriate, it's important that we bring conversations surrounding internet use and how we share online to those same avenues and have similar types of conversations. I think that we can talk to many different people in our lives, from folks that are in the medical field to folks who study different forms of communication, and to folks in the business world. The interesting part of sharing about kids online is that it takes something that you and I think about as adults when we make decisions as to what we share about ourselves. And it creates an additional layer of responsibility, because we're not just talking about private information that we're sharing about our own lives, but private information that we might be sharing about our kids' lives. And perhaps one of the groups of people really missing from the conversation are the kids themselves. How do kids feel about their information being shared online? And how can we better have child-centered discussions around the topic?
Well, Stacey, I'd like to know what the children's rights really are. And I want to precede that question with a section of a research paper that you wrote called Sharenting: Children's Privacy in the Age of Social Media. The quote is, "Privacy laws provide little guidance, prohibitions, or remedial measures for children needing privacy protection from their parents' online disclosures. This reality is partly based on the idea that society generally accepts the notion that parents will always do what is best for their children. In addition, these laws are designed to protect information about children generated outside the home, primarily in school and healthcare settings. In the context of these settings, parents are presumed to be the best guardians to ensure protection of their children's private information. These frameworks do not include social media sharing, nor do they consider a parent as a potential source of harmful disclosure." So what are the children's rights in those circumstances?
Well, in the United States, there are kids really have very few rights that are privacy rights that are separate from their parents. A lot of times I think of them more as interests in the context of family. We give strong deference to parental freedoms here in the United States, but at the same time, I don't think that parents are oversharing because they're trying to be malicious or they're trying to impede on their children's rights. I think that they're doing it because they simply haven't yet considered the importance of a child's digital footprint. And in the context of online sharing about kids, it's a really uniquely original circumstance. Like you mentioned from my paper, in contexts like FERPA that protect a child's educational information or HIPAA that protects a child's healthcare information, it's the parent that tells the third party how much information, if any, can be disclosed. But in the unique context of sharenting, it's the parent who's also disclosing it. So I think that it creates this extra level of responsibility, but also this extra layer of complexity with regards to privacy sharing. So to come back to your question about what rights do kids have, I think that the rights that kids might have to protect their information from their parents sharing it on social media are probably very few, especially in the United States, because of our strong First Amendment protections for free speech and because of our strong deference to parents making decisions on behalf of their kids. But I think that if we broaden it and think of it more as an ethical dilemma, we're better able to think about families in the way that this new cultural shift requires us to.
You can join our conversation at 513-419-7100. 513-419-7100 is the number to call to join this conversation. Nancy, sharing on social media has gotten so much easier in just the past few years. Smartphones have practically become little computers that we keep in our pockets. We can share videos very quickly to multiple platforms. And in your writing, you reference something called life logging. Can you explain to us what that is?
Sure. So life logging refers to keeping track of different activities. It can be everything from biosensors to tracking of photos. Some parents are even putting video cameras on their child or on their chest, kind of like the to watch the child. So it's this like constant logging of the child's activities, their various interactions.
So with life logging becoming so much more prominent in our daily lives, is it just that parents and family members don't think too much about sharing the lives of their young ones as well?
I really do think that's the case. It becomes so natural, and a lot of youth as well. It's something that they've grown up with. So the parents of today grew up with all these newer technologies, and so it was a part of their lifestyle, and it's just become more easy for them to share and more accepting for them as well.
So I'm old enough now to be somewhat out of touch with like who the kids are looking at as popular people and some of the YouTube stars, for example. So I'm a big fan of Twitter. And if someone's trending because they did something goofy or, some relationship dissolved, and I happen to click to read on it just to see who this person is, I think, gosh, that's such a young person who has amassed a social media following that is remarkable. And Stacey, I'm wondering what happens to someone like that, someone who's, say, a young teenager that on their own enterprise this entertainment venue to draw millions of people to follow them on either YouTube or Instagram or whatever the case might be. What happens when that person grows up and doesn't want to be in the public eye anymore? Do they relinquish any rights when they become famous as children?
Great question. In the United States, there is very little guidance when it comes to online becoming an online celebrity as a child and what happens when you get older. But I think that what we can glean from the legal landscape is that, yes, there are cases that suggest once you are a public figure, you are always a public figure. And in one of my papers, I talked about a young boy with the last name of Sidus who, long before the internet, back
long before the 1910s, anything,
100 years ago, this boy Sidus was a young prodigy, and his parents kind of put him on display as being someone that was so brilliant and really had this really bright future ahead of him. And he got a lot of attention for it. When he became an adult, he didn't like all that attention and he wanted to live a more reclusive life. Unfortunately, there were some media sites that thought it was a good idea, some newspapers who wanted to see what happened to this young prodigy. Did he live up to the big expectations of his youth? And they followed him around and they treated him the way that we would treat a public figure in the media. Sidus ended up suing that newspaper. When the court heard the case, though, the court said, once a public figure, always a public figure. And so because there was this interest in this child's life when he was younger and he had that sort of publicity, he couldn't go back to being kind of a private person later on. And the newspaper was within its legal rights to go ahead and follow him. So while I don't know exactly how that would impact a case now, 100 years later, but I think that it gives us some idea of where the courts might lean. There are things like the right to be forgotten in Europe, which gives an individual the right to have information kind of removed from their name or their years later if it's no longer relevant to their reputation. But the right to be forgotten doctrine does not apply right now fully in the United States. There are some scholars who suggest that it applies in some small ways. But I would be really interested to see if there was a way for it to one day kind of revive itself or come to be in the United States when we're talking about information that parents or kids themselves share about them when they're younger. But right now, we don't have something quite like that. And if you don't mind, I wanted to also go back to kind of why people share, why these kids might share, and why parents share about their families online. And I think that that's an important piece of the conversation, that there really is power in sharing our stories. And so while there are parents who overshare and there are certain things that kids might not want shared online, I think it's really important to think about the power of narratives and the power of being vulnerable online, because I think that that helps to move society forward. So when I talk about this topic, one of the things I like to really suggest is that I'm in no way trying to silence a parent's voice, because I think that a lot of positive can also come from that.
And that leads me to referencing another piece from Nancy's writing. You wrote, quote, higher amounts of Facebook use among new mothers was associated with higher levels of maternal identity confirmation and societal-oriented parenting perfectionism among new mothers. While social media may reinforce and represent their new parental identity, it is also creating an identity for the child. This becomes particularly problematic as children become teens and want to create and shape their own unique identities. So does that mean then that there is outside pressure felt by new parents about how they're supposed to look to the world?
Oh, absolutely. There's definitely calling out on parents on, I can't believe you just did that. I can't believe you shared that information, or what kind of parent are you? So there's definitely some concerns, both, it can be part of the social community that they're building with other parents and they're not able to get out as much. So they're building that community, but then it can also be very heartbreaking to post something and then get criticism for it.
Let's go to the phone lines and get a question in. We have Robin on the line. Hi, Robin. What's your question or comment?
I just have a comment that as parents, we have to think of what our kids are seeing when they're on our social media feed. And I have a couple of examples where I innocently posted something of my 14-year-old, and he thought it was embarrassing. I posted a picture of him at a swim meet in his swim uniform, and he thought that was embarrassing because he was in a Speedo. Or pictures of him where I thought he was being funny and he was posting in front of exotic cars. And then his friend asked about them at the lunchroom the next day because that friend had seen those pictures on my friend's Facebook feed. And he was like, Mom, I didn't want you to post those. Those were embarrassing. So I think we really have to look at it from their perspective. I have stopped posting because I feel like my kids don't appreciate my posting pictures of them. So that's my comment.
Well, Robin, we can certainly relate to the long history of mothers embarrassing their children. We appreciate your call. And it sounds like Robin adjusted her behavior based on feedback from her kids, which is, I guess, sort of the point of the segment today. So with that in mind, and you both being scholars in this area, I want to ask you each, and we'll start with you, Stacy, in our final minute or so here. If you were sitting in a class, if we were sitting in a class and you were standing in front of us, what would you tell us as the first lesson as it relates to our children and how we should handle their stories on social media?
I think that what I would tell you is that the first thing is that we need to talk to our kids and we need to involve them in the conversation. We need to get their consent before we share their pictures online. And even when they're young, we need to think about how they might feel when they are that 13 or 14-year-old sitting at the lunchroom and that picture is shown. We have a really important responsibility to shepherd our children's digital footprint into the future and to protect it until they come of age and are able to take control of it themselves.
And Nancy, we've got about 30 seconds. What's on your syllabus if you were teaching that course to us today?
And I would reiterate that as well, but also be thinking about privacy practices. So are there certain types of practices that the parents can engage in, think before you share, is not only practical for your child, but also for you as well.
Our thanks to Nancy Jennings and Stacy Steinberg for joining us. Great conversation. Thanks to you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition. The producer for today's show is Pete Reitmeier. The assistant producer is Selena Reeder. The technical director is Josh Elstrow. I'm Michael Monks. Subscribe to our podcast at wvxu.org.